Like Austin, Andrew was gratified that they had not had to fight to enter Nacogdoches. He sensed that Michael harbored a little disappointment, however, for a good scrap would have capped this little venture away from the boredom of the farm on the Colorado River. Andrew had to smile when Pete Bradley nodded his head cockily.
Cowards! The lot of them! I figured they had turned tail and ran when they seen us coming!
Dick Johnson called Bradley's hand.
I thought you said they were liable to kill us all.
When did I ever say that? You must have been listening to somebody else.
Andrew was relieved that a diligent search of the town revealed no trace of old Tolliver Beard. Like many of the others, he evidently had fled eastward into Louisiana, from whence he had come. Michael was not quite so pleased.
It'd have been better if we could have caught him. I'd feel a lot better knowing he was in a Mexican prison someplace and not roaming around out yonder somewhere waiting for a chance to kill you.
It's a long way from Louisiana to the Colorado River. You won't know where to find me.
The Blackwoods found us, didn't they?
The two older Moreno brothers had joined Austin's column, leaving younger brother Felipe behind with the rest of the family. Carlos and Ramon rode with Andrew and Michael, Johnson and Bradley now, carrying their search through the town and out into the countryside. The Morenos' main interest had been in finding Tolliver Beard and impressing their disapproval upon him in some memorable way. They accepted failure philosophically.
Your brother is right, Miguel. We seek after birds that have flown the nest, while we are tied to the ground.
Carlos spoke what was truly on his mind.
There is nothing more for us to do here. I would like to go home.
Carlos was a married man with responsibilities. Andrew thought Michael should feel the same way. He looked hopefully at his brother.
Ramon's right. Marie'll be wondering and worrying. You ought to be getting home to her.
Michael's eyes softened at the mention of his wife's name. His righteous indignation seemed to fade.
We ought to go tell Austin before we take our leave.
They found Stephen Austin looking very concerned for a man who had won a victory without firing a shot. The impresario sat in the old stone fort building, frowning over a lengthy report he was writing. Though the papers were upside down from his side of the table, Andrew could see that Austin was composing in Spanish, probably giving a full report to the authorities in Mexico City. He smiled at the Lewis brothers, seeming to read their minds.
You have my permission.
In truth, they didn't need it. Neither one of them was an enlisted member of the militia.
Thank you.
Andrew nodded toward the papers spread in front of Austin.
Least you can tell Mexico that the whole thing was little or nothing. It wouldn't have raised a wave in a coffee pot. Most of the people around Nacogdoches are glad to see the Fredonians go. The Americans who've settled in Texas are a faithful lot.
I know that, and you know it. But except for Colonel Ahumada, the officials of Mexico have not seen it themselves. I'm afraid they'll read a great deal more into this little insurrection than was ever here. Those who have always distrusted us will tell them the worst, and I fear the officials will be inclined to listen to them.
But in the end, they always listen to you.
Up to now. The Morenos will be going with you?
Yes, sir. I expect the people camped around the Moreno farm will be packing up and leaving for their own homes. Carlos and Ramon want to be there to tell them adios.
And they'll want to be there when the Blackwoods leave, to be sure they don't take away more than they brought with them.
Andrew felt he should probably salute or something, inasmuch as Austin was an officer of the volunteer colonist militia, but he didn't know how.
Come and see us when you can.
The men started for the door.
Andrew, Michael, there is one more thing.
Andrew didn't like the reluctance he saw in Austin's thin face.
Michael, you mentioned the Blackwood family. I've already gathered that you and Andrew have no great love for them.
You have good eyes, sir.
Nevertheless, I owe Isaac Blackwood a debt for having come to report to me about the Fredonians. So I gave him a letter from my assistant Sam Williams in San Felipe. The Blackwoods will receive a grant of land.
Not close to ours, I hope.
The choice is theirs.
Andrew saw steel come into his brother's eyes. He gritted his teeth and grabbed Michael's arm, hustling him out of the room before he could say something he might someday regret.
He don't know what he's done.
He did what he thought he had to do.
Yeah.
Michael's body was rigid as he mounted his horse. He kept a stony silence and avoided looking at anybody. Dick Johnson arched an eyebrow.
What's got into him?
Must have been bad news. Ain't but little happens around here that ain't bad news.
Carlos and Ramon were too polite to ask questions. Michael took the lead as they started upon the trail that led southward from town.
I'm sorry I didn't shoot the bastards when I had a chance.
What did you say?
I just said I'm sorry for all the times I had good excuse for shooting a Blackwood and didn't do it.
Carlos took over the lead, for he was a married man whose wife awaited him anxiously and would be demonstrative in her relief that nothing unpleasant had befallen him. Michael was moody and silent, brooding about the Blackwoods. Andrew found himself riding along with his head down, thinking about Marie, about Petra. Sometimes it was hard to know which image came into his mind. Ahead from down the trail, he saw a flash. In the split second before the rifle ball snarled past his ear, he recognized Tolliver Beard, smoking rifle, braced against a heavy pine tree. Then, before anyone seemed able to react to the surprise and begin to move, Beard was on his horse and racing away through the pines. Andrew sat, frozen. Ramon and Carlos, Johnson and Bradley went spurring into the timber after Beard. Michael reached out and grabbed Andrew's shoulder.
You hit?
It was a moment before Andrew was able to answer. His mouth was suddenly bone dry.
I'm all right. Just taking me by surprise is all.
That the man we all been hunting for?
He is. I reckon he decided not to go to Louisiana.
Don't look that way.
Michael checked the powder in his rifle's pan. For a few minutes, Andrew could hear the sound of horses moving in the forest, plunging through the underbrush. There were no shots, so nobody had caught up with Beard. Andrew regained composure enough to step to the ground, where he might make less of a target if Beard circled back. It was a better part of an hour before the four men returned, empty-handed.
We've seen him once or twice, way off in the timber. Never got close enough for a shot. The last time we seen him, he was moving off in the direction of Louisiana.
But he won't go there. He'll come back, Andrew. He'll come back and kill you sure as hell. And maybe kill all of us.
Michael Lewis gave Andrew a long, concerned study.
I think it's high time we got back to our own part of the country, little brother.
Andrew dreaded stopping at the Moreno farm because he didn't know what he would say to Petra that would not add to the hurt he had already caused her. The six horsemen found the refugee camp breaking up. A few families had already gone. Felipe Moreno came to the shed to greet his brothers as they unsaddled their horses. He was disappointed at the report that they'd not been able to exact retribution upon Beard or his followers. Andrew missed the Blackwoods wagon.
They were the first to leave.
Did you count your chickens?
I watched them load their wagon. There was almost a fight between Phineas and Simon Wells over the rightful ownership of a saddle. Everyone knew it belonged to Simon. Isaac made Phineas leave the saddle here.
Isaac is pretty honest. For a Blackwood.
He just knew they couldn't whip the whole camp.
The older Moreno brothers walked toward the cabin. Carlos's wife hurried out to throw her arms around him. Mother Moreno hugged Ramon. Petra came out onto the porch, her gaze touching gratefully upon her brothers, then searching out Andrew. Her eyes held to his for a moment until he flinched and looked away. When he glanced up again, she was hugging her two brothers who had ridden away to war. She and the rest of the family, except Felipe, were grateful they had not found one. Felipe had wished for blood. Johnson and Bradley went down to their jacal to start gathering up their few possessions. Andrew and Michael stood back from the old cabin, not intruding upon the Moreno family's reunion. Petra pulled away after a minute and came down from the porch. She walked toward Andrew, her dark eyes steady. She stopped two paces short of him.
I am glad to see you, Andrew. I am glad no one was hurt.
Petra.
Andrew had expected her to cry or to shout at him or simply to turn away in silence. He had not expected this calm, controlled reception.
We'll be riding on, Michael and me.
But you will take bread with us first?
We had better not. It's a long way back home.
Much too long for us to leave here on an empty stomach. We accept your invitation, Senorita, with thanks.
Andrew could have kicked Michael.
Petra, we must start cooking. These hungry men must eat.
Petra gave Andrew a moment's quiet and inscrutable study, then turned and followed her mother into the cabin. Andrew watched the door and felt somehow empty.
That girl still makes me want to think of somebody. I just can't figure out who.
Andrew started to tell him she looked a little like Marie, but he was not sure how steady his voice would be. He decided to let Michael figure it out for himself.
I'll go and water the horses.
The meal was punishment to Andrew. He had to sit across the table from Petra and try not to look at her, for seeing her stirred feelings of guilt. He excused himself from the table as soon as he could and walked out to the corral where the horses had been unsaddled and given a little grain. He bridled and began saddling the brown. He heard someone walk up behind him and turned, expecting to see Michael. Petra stood at the gate, watching him. While he tried to think of something to say, she took the initiative away from him.
I'm sorry.
You're sorry? It's me who has something to apologize for.
No, I threw myself at you. I had no right. I have had a few days to think about it, to see that I have caused embarrassment to you.
Andrew stood slump-shouldered, trying to come up with a response.
I just wanted to let you know I am ashamed of myself. I promise you, nothing like that will happen again.
Before he could speak, she walked back toward the cabin. She met Michael, who tipped his hat and turned to look at her a moment before coming on down to the corral. He gave Andrew a quiet study.
Seems to me like you're in an almighty hurry to leave here.
I thought you'd be in a rush to get home with Marie waiting and all.
I reckon. But I have time to tell folks a decent adios.
I've said my goodbyes. If you're ready, let's ride.
You sure you ain't leaving anything undone?
Nothing I can think of.
Riding away, crossing the creek, Andrew stopped once and looked back at the cabin. He thought he might see Petra standing on the porch watching, but she was not there. He hunched a little and spurred to catch up to Michael. They rode in silence a while.
As I recollect, you was aiming to come back from this trip with a wife.
That was your idea, and Marie's not mine.
Maybe so, and not a bad idea either. Couldn't you find a suitable woman?
I got kind of busy.
Not that busy? It was at the Moreno farm a right long time. Seemed to me like I seen something in that Petra girl's eyes whenever she looked at you.
You've got too much imagination.
Or maybe you've got none at all.
Michael gave him an accusing look, which Andrew tried to ignore.
And those little greens begging to show at the base of the dry old grass. Spring will be coming soon.
Michael was not so easily distracted.
Finally figured out who that Petra girl reminded me of. I don't know how you missed it. She looks a little like our sister Heather, back in Tennessee.
They angled across the country, bypassing Austin's San Felipe because they had no particular business there. They crossed the Brazos River and in due time struck the Colorado at a ford a little way below the Nathan farm where Marie was supposed to be. It was not a river that could be crossed just anywhere a man wanted to unless he was prepared to swim. And it was a little swollen, indicating that rain had fallen upstream, a harbinger of a favorable spring season.
Water looks cold.
A little muddy, too.
It often was, in varying degrees. That was why it bore as a name the Spanish word for reddish. Michael dismounted and began peeling off his clothes.
Then our dirt won't hurt it much. I ain't going home to Marie without I bathe first. She's got notions about such as that. Comes from the French side of her, I reckon.
Yeah.
Andrew dropped his roll on the ground and sought out a chunk of Marie's lye soap, made in a washpot behind her cabin. It had been used sparingly on this trip because the winter weather had not been conducive to bathing often or long. It was good for removing dirt, but sometimes it took skin, too. He pitched the soap to Michael, who caught it and stepped out into the edge of the water.
Cold, did you say? It may be coming spring out of the land, but it's still winter in the water.
Andrew finished stripping to the skin and plunged in. The initial shock was enough to take a breath, but once he had shivered away the first chill, the water became bearable. Michael handed him the soap. He shaved the best he could with the cold river water and the lye soap and without a mirror. His face burned as if he were peeling the skin from it. He suspected he probably was in places. Done, he handed the razor to Michael and climbed out of the river.
Hell, ain't it? The things a man'll do for a woman.
Andrew thought of Petra Moreno.
You know better than I would. I don't have one.
Your fault, not mine.
Dressed, they crossed over the shallow ford. Michael grinned in anticipation.
Oh, Marie'll be tickled to see us. She'll put the big pot in the little one tonight. I've been hungry ever since we left the Moreno's place.
Andrew took that for a favorable sign. Maybe Michael had the roaming worked out of his system for a while.
Can't hardly wait to see the youngins. Till you get some of your own little brother, you can't know how they please a man.
Andrew frowned. He didn't see much chance for having any of his own. Not in the near future. They were all keyed up for a reunion at the Nathan place, but they were disappointed. Miles Nathan met them in the yard and invited them into the cabin to see the new Nathan baby. Andrew noticed that the two bachelors, Walker Younce and Joe Smith, were sitting together on a rough bench in front, staring glumly off toward a meadow. There the girl Birdie walked with a boy who appeared to be nearing her own age, or at least not so much older as Younce and Smith. Squinting, Andrew recognized Zeb Willett. Nathan grinned.
The path of true love is indeed a thorny one, full of pitfalls.
Mrs. Nathan was already at the fireplace, fixing something for the family to eat.
Michael, your Marie is a fine midwife. I just wish you'd go look at my new baby girl.
Michael tried to show a great interest, but his disappointment showed more.
Where'd Marie go?
Home. There was some folks come by in a wagon and offered her a ride, so she tied her milk cow on behind and went with them. Said she had a heap of work piling up and waiting, and a garden that'd soon need planting. You all are staying for dinner, aren't you?
Couldn't eat. Ain't hungry. Much obliged, but we'll be riding on.
Andrew was gratified to see his brother so eager to return to Marie. Maybe it would be a while before he got restless enough to want to leave again. Other times, coming home after a long trip of solitary exploration, Michael had gone in nervously, guilty about having left, guilty about having stayed so long. For this trip, he had had a solid excuse, and no apologies were necessary. They came upon a roan cow with his brand burned on her hip. She pulled away distrustfully from the horseman, but not before Andrew saw that her side bulged.
Looks like she'll be freshening pretty soon.
The Lewis fortune was growing, one crop, one calf at a time. Andrew nodded.
Looks to me like you got just about everything a man could want.
They rode up over a small roll in the land, and Michael's cabin came suddenly into view half a mile away.
Come on, Andrew. I can already taste that cornbread.
Andrew saw a wagon sitting near the double cabin. It was covered with canvas.
Looks like you've got company.
Reckon who it could be? You don't suppose some of our folks from Tennessee?
Approaching the cabin, Andrew began to suspect that he knew the wagon. He decided not to voice his suspicions. If he was right, Michael would find out all too soon. He was right. He saw a man on a wooden bench leaned back against the log wall, lazing in the sun. The man got up and strode forward. He had only half of his right arm.
Welcome home, Michael Lewis.
Michael dismounted stiffly. His jaw was thrust forward belligerently as he confronted Finnis Blackwood.
I've run you off this place once already, Finnis. What are you doing here?
Finnis was looking more like his shiftless old daddy every day, Andrew thought. His beard was black and unkempt and showing traces of tobacco juice. He had old Cyrus Blackwood's half-contentious, half-whining way of meeting a challenge.
Why, now it was your missus herself that invited us to stay. We wasn't figuring to impose, but when she seen Nellie's delicate condition, she wouldn't have it no other way. Good woman you got there, even if she does talk a little funny.
Andrew found dark humor in Finnis's description. Nellie was indeed pregnant, but hardly delicate.
I'll expect you to be gone in an hour, Finnis, and I never want to see you on my land again.
Well, now, might be you'd want to ask your missus about that first. Strikes me as a woman with notions of her own, she does.
Daddy!
Little Mordecai hurried out from the open dog run, opening his arms for his father. Michael turned away from Finnis and leaned down to catch his son, sweeping him up into his arms. He and the boy hugged each other fiercely. Andrew watched, wishing. Marie stepped out then, wiping her hands on a rough homespun cotton towel.
Michael!
Marie started to run to him, as Mordecai had, then glanced at Andrew and Finnis and caught herself. Andrew felt suddenly guilty, feeling that he was compromising the couple's rightful, joyous reunion. Michael embraced his wife while still holding on to the boy.
Oh.
How's the baby?
Fine. She's fine. It is good you have come home.
Michael turned, staring balefully at Finnis.
I sure have to agree with that. You know who this man is?
Marie had to know, for the Blackwood family had often been discussed around the Lewis family hearth, along with droughts and grasshoppers and fever epidemics.
They are in need. Nellie is in the Hope.
Damn little Hope tied to such as Finnis. Did she tell you they ain't even married?
We're married, Michael. Found us a preacher named Fairweather and done it all proper and legal. Man gets more land if he's got him a wife.
Andrew had to run away and grin. He doubted that Fairweather's services carried any legality. He was self-ordained. But that was a problem for the Blackwoods to work out. And Austin.
I told Finnis to pack up and be gone from here before dark.
Marie pulled back to arm's length.
And I told him they could stay until they get the cabin up.
Maybe you just don't realize what kind of people they are.
A woman in her condition should not live in a wagon. That I realize. Until they have a cabin, she will stay with us.
Michael turned resentfully upon Finnis.
You got yourself some land already?
Finnis nodded, triumph in his eyes. He raised his good hand and pointed eastward.
Yonder, a ways down the river and on the other side.
Andrew took some little comfort in the fact that they would at least be across the river. Michael glanced at Andrew, his eyes flashing anger.
I thought Texas was far enough away.
We'll be your neighbors again, Michael. Just like back in Tennessee.
You may live here, but you'll be no neighbor of mine, not in 100 years. I'm going in and see the baby.
She's not in the bedroom. I let Nellie have that. And Finnis, we sleep in the kitchen.
Damn.
Michael stomped into the cabin. Marie stared after him, her dark eyes a little hurt. They reminded Andrew of Petra's.
Hello, Marie. Remember me?
Oh.
Marie gave him a sisterly hug.
I am sorry, Andrew. It was not as I wished. I did not know he felt so strongly.
You know now.
Andrew watched as Finnis retreated to the bedroom side of the double cabin. It was discomforting to think of him and Nellie profaning that place which had been graced by Marie and Michael's love. Marie glanced in that direction a moment, and Andrew wondered if the same thought had come to her. She probably would not admit it, but she might have found reason by now to regret her hospitable nature.
The sooner the Blackwoods are off this place, the better.
I could not turn the poor woman away.
We can't run them out of the country. I reckon they've got a legal claim to stay. Best thing to do is get some of the neighbors over and raise them a cabin as quick as we can. Till we get that done, I'll give them the borrow of mine.
I could not ask that of you, Andrew.
Now I'm doing it on my own. I don't want to see an argument come between you and Michael.
And what of the argument between you and Michael?
Yeah, we sort of lost it somewhere along the way. Did you really send him along with Austin to see about me?
I did.
Yeah, you're too generous a woman, Marie.
And you are a generous man, Andrew Lewis, to give up your cabin to the Blackwoods.
I was just hoping to keep Michael from doing murder. I'll bring my stove over here and sleep in the shed.
When the Blackwoods leave, you can sleep in the kitchen.
That would not give Michael and Marie the privacy they needed, especially since Michael had been away a while.
Shed'll do fine.
Marie smiled again. He suspected she understood his reason.
For you and Michael, I will fix a big supper tonight.
Yeah, I'd be much obliged.
She started to turn away, but stopped to study him thoughtfully.
I had hoped you would not come back alone.
Looking at Marie, he remembered Petra and felt a tug of regret.
A man can't force some things. They gotta come natural, or not at all.
Marie touched his hand, and warmth arose in him. But as he looked into her lively eyes, he found he was seeing Petra, not Marie.
Sometimes nature needs help.
She left him standing there awkwardly holding the brown horse's reins. Andrew tied the horse to a post and walked around to the back. There he saw Isaac Blackwood, axe in hand, cutting pine logs and branches into firewood. A goodly supply was neatly stacked near the cabin.
Got all that yourself, Isaac?
Isaac turned, wiping sweat from his face onto his sleeve.
Not all of it. There's already a little here when we come. I figure I ought to do something to help earn our keep.
Andrew wondered. This was not like the Blackwoods he remembered. Certainly not like Finnis. Or Luke. It was the first time that middle brother had come to mind.
Where's Luke?
Down by the river, trying to catch some fish. He never was much of a hand with a chopping axe.
Andrew pointed toward his cabin.
That's my cabin up yonder. I'm gonna lend y'all the use of it till you get a cabin of your own put up. Or maybe two cabins. Seeing that Finnis and Nellie are married now, it's kinda awkward all you sleeping in one.
Wouldn't be the first time. Now Nellie may not look like much, and she's not as smart as some, but she's a woman. We're gonna do right by her. She's gonna be a mother by and by.
To Finnis's baby?
Maybe. But I'd like to think it just might be mine. Oh, that surprised you, Andrew.
Can't say as it does. I think that the young'un'd have a better chance of life being yours than being his. But how'll you ever know?
I'll know. I'll look at it, and I'll know.
Andrew bent over and started picking up some of the wood.
I'll be carrying this into the kitchen for you.
Andrew made a horseback round to the nearest neighbors, including the Willett family, the Nathans, the bachelors Younce and Smith, and set a day for them all to gather at the Blackwoods place to raise a cabin. He knew he should be breaking out his field in preparation for the spring planting, but it was more important to get the Blackwoods out of his cabin and far enough away that he didn't have to look at them often. He and Michael and Isaac felled and trimmed trees, dragging them up to the site where two cabins were to be erected. Finnis pleaded helplessness because of his crippled condition. Luke didn't plead at all, he just went to the river and fished. The saving grace in the whole situation was that the claim was a full 3 miles downriver and on the opposite side. The river was a barrier of sorts, psychological if not physical, so maybe the Blackwoods wouldn't venture too often to its south side. Andrew and Michael agreed that Marie had better take a close count of her chickens every day for a while. There had always been plenty of four-legged varmints skulking around, looking for a chance to grab them, but the Blackwoods introduced a new dimension to the need for vigilance. Michael was in a dark mood while they prepared for the cabin raising.
It goes against all that's sacred and holy to be putting forth this amount of sweat for such people as that. But Marie wouldn't have it no different. I hope the day don't come when she regrets that kind heart of hers.
Yeah, that's one of the things that makes her special. Maybe you don't know how lucky you are to have her.
I do know. Otherwise, I'd be doing something else than chopping timbers for the Blackwood family.
Cabin raising was usually the occasion for a community party in Colonial Texas, and some effort was made in that direction for the Blackwoods. The women folk brought food, and some made new clothes for Nellie to wear during her indisposition. The men brought their building tools, their teams, and somebody brought along some bad whiskey that had never seen Kentucky. Finnis and Luke got a lot more interested in the whiskey than in the building project. They became considerably more of a hazard than a help. Isaac stayed sober and did much of the heavy lifting. By dusk, two cabins were standing where there had been but grass before. There would be much finishing out to do, but the major work was done. Normally, it would have been time for everybody to cut loose and celebrate, but Finnis and Luke got into a terrible row that ended with each of them trying to beat the other's brains out. Watching disgustedly, Andrew thought it was a hopeless cause. Neither had enough brains that anybody would notice if they did get knocked out. At least now he should be able to move back into his own cabin, though he might have to let it air a couple of days first. He had noticed a long time ago that horses hated to move in where hogs had moved out. There were times, usually when Andrew least expected it, that a sudden violent image would explode in his brain and he would find himself confronting the memory of the day he'd been forced to shoot Jace Beard. He began to understand how old dreams of a Spanish massacre could still sometimes haunt his brother Michael. Always after the image of Jace, he saw the vengeful eyes of old Tolliver Beard and heard Beard's promise to kill him. It was a long way to Nacogdoches, farther even to the Louisiana line. He felt some safety in that distance. The old man had tried once to kill him and had missed. Chances were he had given up and gone back to Louisiana to nurse his grief. But Michael had a colder view of the world and its violence, for he had seen more of it than Andrew.
When I heard about that old man, he meant what he told you. It might be a week, it might be a month, it might be a year, but that day will come when you'll look up and see him. You'd better not let him catch you unprepared.
As Andrew had stayed close to Michael earlier when they had reason to fear the Blackwoods, Michael kept close to Andrew now, watching always for a stranger. They worked together as they plowed their fields, as they handled their few cattle, as they hunted wild game for the table. A rifle was never far from reach by one or the other. Andrew wearied of the watchfulness and was inclined to forget, but Michael was not. And one day, as they were planting corn, Andrew saw Michael stop abruptly, his attention riveted to the east. Sweat ran into Andrew's eyes and stung them, so he had to wipe them clear before he made out the vague shape of two horsemen.
That wouldn't be Beard. There's two of them.
He might have brought help.
Michael stepped across the plowed rows, picking up his rifle that he had leaned against the rail fence. Andrew had left his own weapon at the end of the field. He set out in a trot across the soft ground to fetch it. By the time he'd retrieved the rifle, Michael had joined him, waiting by the fence on the lower side. A rail fence always made a good rest for a rifle if a man needed to take careful aim. But Andrew saw no threat. In fact, one of the riders was slumped forward in the saddle as if hurt or sick. The other began waving his hat. When the two riders were close enough, he recognized one.
It's Isaac Blackwood. The other one, I can't tell.
It's Eli Pleasant. It's Eli, and there's something the matter with him.
Michael vaulted over the rail fence and hurried toward the horseman in a long-legged stride that Andrew found impossible to catch up with. Eli was bleeding. He had his right hand pressed against his chest, but blood seeped out between his bony old fingers. His grizzled face was ashen. Michael reached him first, grabbing the old man as he seemed about to slip out of the saddle. He steadied Eli on the horse and then turned furiously upon the other rider.
Isaac Blackwood, if you all have done this...
I was out of hunting. I heard a shot and found Eli on the ground. I wanted to take him to our place. It was closer, but he wanted to come to you.
Eli raised his head. He seemed to have trouble seeing.
I had to come tell you. It's Dolliver Beard.
Andrew felt the bottom drop out of his stomach.
He's here? He shot you.
Eli nodded.
Let's get him to the house. He'll die sitting on that horse.
Andrew bit his lip. To him, it looked as if Eli would die no matter where he was. He took the reins while Michael swung up behind Eli to hold him in the saddle. Isaac motioned for Andrew to get onto his dun horse behind him. Marie was waiting at the dog run as they rode up. Andrew slipped off Isaac's horse and helped Michael lift Eli carefully down from the saddle. Marie's face whitened, but she held the bedroom door open while the brothers carried Eli in and laid him gently on the bed.
I'll need a sharp knife and hot water and some cloth for bandages. We've got to get that bullet out of him.
Eli raised his hand as if to wave Michael off.
Too late for that. He put it in too deep.
For a moment, Andrew feared he was gone. But Eli opened his eyes. He blinked, trying to see.
Which one's Andrew?
I'm here, Eli.
He's come for you, Andrew. I heard and I tried to get here first, but we ran together out yonder.
Andrew's throat tightened.
You oughtn't to have, Eli. We've both been watching for him. He wouldn't have caught us by surprise.
Missy, where's Marie?
Here, Eli.
Seen your papa. Your mama, too. They said, tell you...
Marie took his hand and held it tightly.
It's all right, Eli. You don't have to talk now.
Andrew took a cloth and wiped the blood away from Eli's mouth. Eli tried to focus on him.
Watch him, Andrew. He's a mean old man. He'll... You Lewis boys, you're going to be the death of me yet.
With that, he was gone. Michael folded the old hands carefully across Eli's chest. Andrew wiped the blood from Eli's face the best he could, then pulled the boots from Eli's feet. Isaac stood back quietly. He had known Eli but briefly at the Moreno farm.
I'll go tend to the horses and leave you folks with him for a spell.
Nobody replied, so Isaac walked quietly out the door and onto the dog run. He stopped dead still. Something about his manner made Andrew look up.
Andrew! He's out here!
Beard?
He felt that cold chill in his stomach again.
I expect so. It looks like the description. He's just standing out here beside his horse, like he's waiting.
Let him wait. I can draw a bead on him from the window.
Andrew gritted his teeth. He picked up his rifle and checked the load.
No, I gotta do this myself. It was me he came here for. It was me Eli died for. It's for me to finish.
Andrew gave his brother and Marie a long study. He saw raw fear in Marie's eyes.
He's got a look in his eye that I've seen in a bear's just before he charged. He's got a rifle, and it looks like he knows how to use it.
Andrew glanced once more at Eli.
I know he does.
Andrew stepped out onto the dog run, rifle in his hands, in a ready position. Old Tolliver Beard's eyes were as Isaac had said. They were like eyes Andrew had seen in a boyhood nightmare.
I've come to have my vengeance, Andrew Lewis. Blood for blood. Are you prepared for eternity?
Andrew made no answer. His throat was too tight. No answer would have changed anything. The old man betrayed himself. He narrowed his eyes just before he brought the rifle into position to aim. That was edge enough for Andrew. He leveled his own rifle, saw the man's broad chest over the sights, and squeezed the trigger. Something struck his head with the force of a sledge. He felt as if his brain had exploded. He was driven back, stumbling, falling hard upon the floor of the dog run. Andrew's return to consciousness was slow and painful. His first awareness was that his head ached as if someone were driving a hammer against his skull. He drifted in and out of vague dreams in which he relived the shooting of Jace Beard, and he saw the vengeful old man standing in Michael's yard, cursing him, raising the rifle to his shoulder. The dream would fade, and he was back at the Moreno farm, sitting with Petra, or walking with her along the creek, holding her and not wanting to let her go. Then Petra would disappear, and Jace would come again with the hard-eyed old Tolliver Beard. Andrew would go through the shootings once more. Sometimes he saw Eli Pleasant, sometimes he didn't. There was something strange about Eli. He sensed that these were only dreams, but they were so real that he went through the rush of all the old emotions as each came and went and transformed into something else. He became aware of light, eventually, and slowly opened his eyes. Andrew found his vision was blurred. Something seemed to be crushing his head. He raised his hand and found a bandage there. He saw the vague, thin figure of a woman sitting in a chair, and he was back at the Moreno farm as he had been after the beating in Nacogdoches.
Petra?
The woman rose and came to his side, and he realized he was lying on a bed.
It's Marie.
A hand touched his cheek.
You do not need to move. You just lie there.
Through a haze, he could see her move to the light where he discerned the fuzzy outline of a door.
Michael?
The voice was Petra's, or seemed to be. But why would Petra be calling for Michael? His confusion frustrated him. How did he get back to the Moreno place?
You finally coming alive, little brother? Me and Marie, we began to wonder if you ever would.
Marie? What is Marie doing at the Moreno farm?
This ain't the Moreno place. It's our house, mine and Marie's. That shot kind of churned your brain, looks like.
Andrew closed his eyes, for the light hurt them. Gradually, it began coming back to him, a little here, a little there. He remembered about Tolliver Beard.
Beard? What happened to Tolliver Beard?
He's dead. You got him square through the heart. Way it looked to me, you fired a second before he did. Your bullet hit him just as he pulled the trigger. Else he'd have shot you plumb center instead of laying a bullet up against your skull.
Andrew couldn't remember that part of it. He remembered the old man bringing his rifle around. He thought he remembered himself squeezing the trigger. He wasn't sure.
At least you paid him for Eli.
Eli. Andrew had forgotten. Eli was dead. Old Eli, friend of their father. He had saved Michael's life and probably Andrew's as well, pulling him away from that mob in Nacogdoches. And now he was dead.
Nothing would ever pay for Eli.
Andrew opened his eyes again, though the light hurt them. He could discern Michael standing over him, Marie by his side. Or was it Petra? Everything was so blurry, he couldn't tell.
My eyes. Something's wrong with my eyes.
I'm not surprised. That rifle ball cut a crease along the side of your head. It was bound to affect something. But you got the hard head that comes with being a Lewis. It'll probably be all right in a day or two.
Andrew tried sitting up. The pounding intensified, and he had to drop back upon the pillow.
You lie still now, Andrew. You should not too soon get up.
The words were English, so this had to be Marie. Petra did not speak English.
First time in my life I didn't know where I was at.
Or who you were with. You called me Petra.
Michael, we gotta do something about Eli.
Isaac has gone to fetch the neighbors so we can give him a fitting funeral. I thought we'd bury him up on that hill yonder where he can watch over us. If it wasn't for him, we would none of us be here.
What about Tolliver Beard?
We'll bury him on the other side of the river, where we don't have to look at the place and a long ways from Eli.
Andrew remembered something Eli had said after Quentin Mann's death.
Texas, it sure does take a toll.
Andrew was unable to walk up the hill for the funeral. Young Zeb Willett put him onto his own horse and rode double with him to the place where neighbors had dug the grave. There was no preacher, so Miles Nathan delivered the eulogy. Michael stood beside Andrew so Andrew could lean upon him for support when his legs weakened. His vision was better, but still blurred. He saw Marie as if she were wearing a veil, and she looked for all the world like Petra Moreno. Days, Michael was in his field, planting. Andrew felt he should be at his own place doing the same, but he lacked the strength. That blue speckled ox would be getting fat, not having to work. Then one day all the neighbors came back together, and they stayed long enough to plant a good part of Andrew's field for him. They had no sooner finished than a good rain began, assuring that the seeds would sprout. Texas. It could take away with one hand, but it could turn around and give so much with the other. Until his strength returned, Andrew remained with Michael and Marie and the two children. Earlier, he would have liked nothing better than to be close to Marie this way. Now, somehow, things had changed. He could look at Marie without wishing she were his. He looked at Marie and saw someone else. One day he watched Marie hanging out the family's clothes on a line Michael had strung for her. His vision had cleared. It had returned to normal now, except when he looked at Marie. Finished with the clothing, she walked up and stood before him with a willow basket in her hands.
Do you think you can ride a horse?
I suppose I could. Why?
Just now you watched me, but you did not really see me. You looked beyond me, to somewhere else, somebody else.
I didn't know it showed.
Always it has shown, ever since you came home from Nacogdoches. I was not sure, but when you called me by that girl's name, then I knew.
Petra?
Petra. Michael has told me about her. You are a sick man, Andrew Lewis. You will not be well until you go and get her.
I heard her, Marie. She might not come.
I think she will come. I think all you must do is ask her. Must I get Michael to put a saddle on your horse?
Andrew pushed to his feet.
I reckon I'm strong enough to saddle my own horse.
He left at daylight. The first day's ride found him still weak, and he had to stop several times to rest. The second day he did better, and the third day he stopped only because the brown horse needed rest. He found himself pushing the animal harder and harder with each day that passed. The pine trees seemed taller and denser. His excitement built as he remembered landmarks that told him he was getting closer to Nacogdoches. He came finally to the narrow road leading into the timber that hid the Moreno place. He put the brown into an easy lope, a pace he had resisted until now. He broke out of the timber and saw the sprawling cabin, the sheds, the corrals. He saw the field where Ramon and Felipe were working their oxen. They recognized him and waved. They halted their plowing. Andrew waved back, but didn't stop, for he had not come to see Ramon and Felipe. Andrew saw her then, in the garden, wielding a hoe. The old mother was there with her. It was Senora Moreno who saw him first and pointed. Petra turned, her dark eyes wide with surprise and joy. Andrew swung down and almost leaped over the rail fence in his eagerness, but he managed to get control. He tied the horse and walked to the open gate. Senora Moreno came out to meet him.
Oh!
She gave him a hug, looked back with a smile at Petra, then walked toward the cabin without once turning to see. Andrew stopped and stared at Petra for a full two paces.
Petra, you do not know how beautiful you are.
Petra blushed and looked down self-consciously at the stained old dress she wore for the garden work.
Oh, you should not surprise me so. I must look terrible. It's dirty and all.
He moved a step closer.
You are the most beautiful sight I've ever seen in my life.
Andrew wanted to reach for her, to sweep her into his arms, but there were things that had to be said.
I made a mistake, Petra. I told you that when I looked at you, I kept seeing someone else. Well, I have seen her now. When I looked at her,
all I could see was you. All I wanted was to come back and see you again.
So now you see me, all ugly and dirty. Is it worth so long a ride?
It will be much shorter going back, because I will be taking you with me.
Petra stared at him with some trepidation.
I would like that, Andrew. But one thing is bothersome. You are American, I am Mexican. Some people say the two are much too different. Life together may not be easy.
Teos is not easy, but it is worth the struggle.
Petra came to him, and Andrew took her into his arms.
Then let us make the struggle together.
Sons of Texas is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1989, Tom Early, a pseudonym of Elmer Kelton. Published by arrangement with Elmer Kelton, care of Sobel Weber Associates, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Drew Copas, Daniel Stevens, Andy Clements, Elizabeth Jernigan, Thomas Keegan, Joe Brack, Tony Nam, James Konacek, Joseph Thornhill, Yasmin Toison, Michael Glenn, Nick DePinto, Nanette Savard, James Keegan, Christopher Graybill, Bobby Aselford, Tim Getman, David Coyne, Eric Messner, Scott McCormick, M.B. Van Dorn, Michael John Casey, Richard Rowan, Colleen Delaney, Dylan Lynch, Kimberly Gilbert, Nathaniel Perry, Patrick Stratton, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Book adapted for Graphic Audio by Johann Detweiler. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Dwayne Beeman. With original music by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Sons of Texas, be sure to look for Elmer Kelton's Huey Calloway and Texas Rangers series. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
Lucky you, Danny. You've got an admirer or two. Or 100.
I just blew into town and already people want to kill me.
Not kill. Capture. Alive and unharmed.
This is my hunt. You are not taking over. Is that clear?
If she is harmed, I will kill all in my path.
So what's this grand idea of yours?
You may not like it.
Does it give me a better chance of killing Santino?
It does. Yet, you do not trust me, Dante.
I don't trust anyone, not until proven. My jury's still out until you tell me this idea.
Very well. I would wish to give you a gift, a piece of my power. It will make you stronger, faster, less easy to damage.
What's the catch?
I am not sure you would wish to be tied to me so closely. And the process is difficult for humans. Painful.
You would, what, make me into a demon?
Not a demon. My Hedera.
I've never heard of that.
It's not spoken of. It requires a physical bond.
You mean like tantric? Like sex magic?
Very similar.
Oh.
What?
My entire body burned. Changing.
No!
I don't want this. Change me back.
I cannot. You have a demon to hunt, Dante.
Sentinel! I've come to kill you, you scavenger son of a bitch, for what you did to Doreen.
You can't kill me! Neither man nor demon can kill me! Lucifer assured me of that!
Don't miss Dante Valentine, Working for the Devil, Part 2. It's one hell of an adventure. And it's available now in graphic audio.
Of all the sources of power we know, the Wolf Bundle is most powerful on Earth. It is our soul. Our power is human.
I've heard the voices, talked with the stars. Women can no longer be allowed to dictate the ways of the people. It is pollution.
You can't keep blaming starvation on women. I think your dreams are false.
You push too far, Sage Root.
You're no dreamer, no singer. You're nothing but a sick man with delusions.
In 4 days, I shall sing your soul from your body. You shall die.
What are you thinking?
Heavy Beaver hurt the Wolf Bundle. Bad things are loose. I can feel them.
The boy may not be strong enough.
Trust in the circles.
Mother?
I'm not me anymore.
Mother?
I can't fight his power.
Mother!
So the moment has come. Let no one doubt the power of my dreaming. He's trying to kill me!
You're evil, boy.
Someone bring me a club. Today I cleanse the people, no matter how much blood I have to let.
Enough!
Whitecalf, witch?
Turn that boy loose!
Vile pollution, take him. Get him out of here. All of you, get out!
You've made your way, Heavy Beaver. Let's see where it takes you. Little dancer? You and I, we've got a lot to talk about.
North America's Forgotten Past, Book 2, People of the Fire, in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.